NPR Music. This is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Jasmine Garst. And we have in studio Sandra Cisneros. Sandra Cisneros, the celebrated author and poet. A lot of you know her from her one of her most famous works, which is The House on Mango Street. But she's written countless other poems and books, and she's joining us today to talk about music, to talk about her art and her life. Sandra, bienvenidos al programa.
I've always dreamed of being on a radio show like this, so this is so much fun. Thank you.
Sandra's talking to us today from radio station KSTX in San Antonio, so we wish we could be looking across the console at her, but this will have to do for now.
Well, you can imagine, no? Or imaginate. Imagínate.
Can you hear that?
Yes.
Why did you choose this song? What's the story behind this song in your life?
Well, I'm sitting here bopping and moving to it, and I associate this song with my 50th birthday. My birthday is actually on December 20th, but on my 50th birthday, I decided to shove it to another part of the year because I was tired of my birthday being set adrift by Christmas. So I thought, well, you know, it's my I'm going to be that year the whole year. I could pick the date I want. So I celebrated it, the solstice on June 20th at White Sands, New Mexico.
Nice.
Doris gets her oats.
Two of us riding nowhere, spending someone's hard earned.
You know, Sandra, you have the Beatles on your list, and you also have, without giving anything away, you have some older Mexican singers as well. And is this a reflection of the bicultural childhood that you had growing up in Chicago?
I think that Mexican-American kids live in a global world. It's not even bi, it's multi. You know, for those of us who grew up with different countries on our block, different nationalities, you know, we moved into multiple worlds. And I grew up listening to the Beatles and being a ardent Beatle fan when I was in third grade, all the way to adulthood, and, you know, listening to all kinds of music that came to us, either at the flea market or in our living rooms or on the Ed Sullivan Show, all these places that we were influenced by, especially in a big multicultural city like Chicago where I grew up. This song I dedicate to my cousin Licha, who was the vice president of the Beatles fan club while I was the president. And then the next week, she would be the president, I would be the vice president. And, you know, we just were so in love with the Beatles, we thought, I did, that I was going to marry one of them and make tamales for the Beatles. Doesn't everyone dream that? You know, so, yeah, they're so much a part of my life. I can't, you know, I just feel like they were the beginning of the my great love affair with music, and starting from muy niña, you know, third grade. On our way back home. We're on our way home. We're on our way home. We're going home. You and I have memories longer than the road that stretches.
Chasing paper, getting nowhere, on our way back home, we're on our way home.
great. Dana Ross was never better than when she was with the Supremes. To me, it was all downhill from there. When she sang with those Supremes, she was supreme in my book.
And so, and why did you choose this song to play?
Because I grew up listening to a lot of African-American music in the street. I didn't know that you could pay to go hear the blues or, you know, rhythm and blues. All that kind of music was around me at the flea market at Maxwell Street. And I just was thought it was absurd that people would go pay to hear this music because, you know, it was all around us. I grew up next to black communities and went to flea markets where there were musicians jamming and empty lots playing. So I just thought that that was like part of like the air you breathe. It just belongs to everyone. And I remember listening to this record at the flea market and, you know, Supremes. I may have been the first time I heard them. I was a little girl. We would go to the flea market the way other people go to church. We'd be at Maxwell Street. And we'd hear the Supremes singing, you know, because they would be selling the LPs there. Or maybe they were selling stereo or something. And just growing up and bopping down the Maxwell Street, listening to them and how happy it made me feel. It's a time in my life when I lived on Roosevelt Road, not far from the Mexican community in Pilsen.
I read somewhere that your great-grandfather played a piano for a Mexican president.
Well, I think the true story is that my great-grandfather was a school instructor and happened to play the piano when the president came to visit that school.
Isn't it funny how those family stories always get twisted into greatness?
Well, he was a schoolmaster is what he was, and a composer of songs. And, you know, it's true he did compose some songs of which we have evidence. So, but the great claim is that, you know, he played for el presidente, Porfirio Díaz.
Whoa.
And he did. You know, we do have something, certificate signed by Porfirio Díaz, at least a fragment of it that survives. And I believe it was one of those school visits that he came and heard maybe my grandfather was just playing the Mexican national anthem or something in the background or I don't know. But so part of it is true, but in the typical Cisneros fashion, we like to exaggerate and make a story.
Well, when you were bopping down the road, did you ever think you wanted to be a musician or a singer?
Oh, you know what I wanted to be when I was a little kid was just some form of stage presence. I wanted to like be a comedian or a singer or a ballerina, something on the stage so that I could be popular because, of course, I was a total misfit, quiet, shy in public, but not at home. And I lived in my own little mundo. So I really wanted something where I could be popular and make friends. I wanted to be able to, you know, get on the stage and have people applaud. And when my mom was cooking rice, I used to imagine, like when she added the water to the rice and it would roar and sizzle, I would pretend that I was bowing and that was the public applauding me. You know, I'd say, oh, thank you, thank you.
At the same time, when you made a leap, I mean, you're considered really one of the real pivotal figures in Chicano literature, and your work was really unprecedented. Were you... When you started writing, you were writing about something that in the literary scene of the U.S., that didn't really exist, and much less a Latin woman. So were you ever worried that the applause wouldn't come?
If you worry about the applause, Jasmine, it will never come. you can't think that way when you create art. You know, the art comes from deep inside you, and you have to do the work well. You have to honor your craft, whatever that craft is, whether it's making furniture, like my father, the upholsterer, or whether it's sewing a dress or making a story. And what I've learned over the years is the more you think about the public, the more the light will elude you. And by the light, I just mean that muse, that duende, that higher force that travels through us, not from us. So when I'm most humble and I do my work on behalf of others with all my heart and with all my craft and discipline and really finish my work, not half-ass it, but do it well, then the light arrives. And my best work has always come from that place. I always know that if I think about applause or reviews or awards, that I will second-guess and not do a good job.
For some reason, what you're saying reminds me a lot of another artist you picked, which is Chabela Vargas. And probably because even though she's so beloved, she always seemed to me like she just really could not care less what people thought about her openly gender-bending, openly passionate, the love of Mexico that she had, even though she was from Costa Rica. It reminds me of Chabela Vargas. This is Paloma Negra, Black Dove.
Ya me canso de llorar y no amanece. Ya no sé si maldecirte o por ti rezar. Tengo miedo de buscarte y de encontrarte. ¿Dónde me aseguran mis amigos que te vas? Hay momentos en que quisiera mejor rajarme y arrancarme ya los clavos de mi penar. Pero mis ojos se mueren sin mirar tus ojos y mi cariño con la aurora te vuelve a esperar. Y agarraste por tu cuenta la parranda, paloma negra, paloma negra, ¿dónde, dónde andarás? Honra parrandera, si tus caricias han de ser mías de nadie más, y aunque te amo con locura, ya no vuelvas, paloma negra. Eres la reja de un libre, vivir mi vida con quien yo quiera. Dios, dame fuerza, que me estoy muriendo por irla a buscar. Y agarraste por tu cuenta las parrandas.
There's no holding back, man. Corta Vena in the truest sense.
Right? Ay, mátame. Yeah, I know. I picked Chabela Vargas because she is such a passionate artist. She gave her all. You know, she didn't do anything halfway. And I just adore her. Of course, she passed away in 2012, and I just can't, if I had to go live somewhere with just seven songs, I couldn't imagine that one of them wouldn't be this song. I know there are other versions, but mira, con ganas, mujer. Now, this is una mujer, muy mujer, a woman, very much a woman. And she wanted to sing, she said, like the soldaderas, the Mexican women, because she felt that they were women, very much women, who were strong and sang as the Valentina de Adelitas did, you know, with all their corazón. And I like that about her. She teaches me to write from that place and fearlessly, as you said, Jasmine, without thinking about what other people think. And even though she was filled with so much pain, she had such a sad life, you know, was cast off by her family, by her mother, given away to uncles who just didn't care for her. Her father said he was ashamed of her. And she ran away from home as a teenager. And imagine with that wound of not being loved because you're strange, you're odd, you're not like other girls, and fell in love with Mexico, who embraced her eventually. It took years, not until she was over 40, did she find her success. And hasta la muerte, until her last year, she was still wounded. She was still filled with pain. And I think that's why she could interpret pain so well. She had lived it, and she carried it in her soul.
She makes me so proud to be Latin American.
Yes. I used to have this on my answering machine in the days of answering machines. And, you know, there's a line that says, ya agarraste por tu cuenta las parrandas, so that people would know that I was out on my parranda.
That means, and you just went ahead and did your partying on your own.
Ay, Chavela, you know, she can never die. You know, I read an obit and said she had no survivors. And I said, mentira, we are her children and we love her.
No kidding.
I read a quote by you in which you said that you rejected what was at hand and you initially emulated the voices of poets you admired in books, like big male voices, like James Wright, Richard Hugo, and Theodore Rethke. And you said those were all wrong for me. And I'm wondering...
Well, they taught me things. They taught me things. They were beautiful voices, but that's like, you know, when you're trying to become a singer and you imitate someone you love, the best you can do is to do an imitation. You have to find your own and learn from that model. So I learned from these models, but I had to find my own voice.
When did you have a moment in which you said, "This is my voice"?
That happened to me when I was in the cornfields of Iowa in graduate program that I was very unhappy in at the University of Iowa, and I had a moment of enlightenment, epiphany, during a seminar when I realized that it was the thing that made me different from everyone in the room. That's where I had to explore in my writing, not what made me the same, but the point of departure. And what I now teach when I occasionally teach is to ask writers to think of 10 things that make them different from any other writer, or 10 things that make them different from their family or their church or their sexuality or their age or their a profession, you know, on and on. And it's those points of departure that you need to explore as an artist, that your fingerprint, and then something magical happens and it becomes universal.
Felix and I have this ongoing debate in which, you know, we live in a time of a lot of diversity in the U.S. increasingly, and a lot of celebration of diversity. But it's also, it's undeniable that there's still a lot of hostility towards Hispanics in the U.S. And Felix and I have this ongoing debate as to whether it's easier now than it was then. And I guess I want to include you in that debate and ask you if you think would it have been easier or more difficult to find your voice if you'd have come of age nowadays?
Well, perhaps, you know, the older we get, it seems like we get a longer view, but we only get a span of our lifetimes. But perhaps if you look historically at the relations with Mexico and the United States, it's like this married couple that, you know, when they got married, you know, they maybe didn't know each other, and then they have years in which they're not talking to each other, and other years in which they're violently abusing each other, and then there's decades where they're in love. And I think Mexico and the United States have had that kind of relationship. They're in bed together, they're stuck next to each other, and sometimes they're in love and sometimes they're having broncas. We can see Mexico in the 30s, for example, when Chavela was living in Mexico, that all things Mexican were charming and wonderful and exotic, and all of the world flocked to be in post-revolutionary Mexico that was being reborn. And now we're in a phase where we're living with post-9/11 fear, and we have a different relationship to the border and to Mexico. So I think it's a, you know, it goes in cycles of is the matrimonio between the United States and Mexico going well? Are we having problems? And I think we're having real difficulties, and so things are worse right now than they were when I was growing up, and they will be better than when I was growing up sometime. I think that that's the nature of relationship of Mexico and the United States. And it's this matrimonio, and I really wish that we could get some marriage counselor to get it to work.
I was going to say.
That's what we need, you know. I hope it's going to be like one of those Maria Felix movies where then they, you know, they fight and they fight, but in the end they get married and it's happy.
If only.
Maybe they'll get married again. If only, but that. Well, I'm an optimist, so I want to believe that there's going to be a world in which we take responsibility for the matrimony not working, and that we understand that we are part of the abusive Mobius of violence, of creating that Mobius, of setting it, and we also have to be responsible for stopping it as well.
What about your own personal relationship with Mexico? Having grown up here in the United States and you traveled back and forth, driving all the way from Chicago a lot of times, where are you now with Mexico? How do you see the country? How do you see the culture?
Well, this is a special year for me because I'm part of me is being reborn. Part of me is dying. I'm ending a cycle of having lived in Texas, and I'm spending this year traveling through Mexico to improve my Spanish and to rediscover my ancestors and to write. And I'm always the most creative when I'm in Mexico. So I've never lived there, and I'm going to be living there for a year, traveling around and, you know, just I feel like a part of me got lost in the last couple of years in San Antonio, working on behalf of others, and I'm trying to rescue and find myself. You know how those little flyers you see, a little poodle maybe on a lamppost in Oaxaca, and they'll say, "Me llamo Bambi, me desvié de mi casa." You know, I feel like there should be a picture with Sandra saying, "Me llamo Sandra, me desvié de mi casa, busco nuevo hogar." You know, that's what I feel I'm at right now. I'm looking for my camino. I've always been a writer who felt displaced in my homes. I didn't feel I belonged in Chicago. It seemed like an accident that I was born there. Unlike my brothers who were muy a gusto in Chicago and still live there, I never felt at home there, even as a little girl. And I didn't feel at home in Texas, but I made a home. And for a time, it was a very fruitful home. But now I kind of feel like I'm in a new phase, and I'm looking for my new home.
Well, speaking of forgetting and getting lost and being found and remembering, you picked a song sung by Bebo y Sigala, "Se me olvidó que te olvidé," which I just think is... It captures so much about relationships with oneself and with others. It means I forgot that I had forgotten about you.
Yo te recuerdo, cariño. Mucho fuiste para mí, siempre te llamé mi encanto, siempre te llamé mi vida. Hoy tu nombre se me olvida.
Se me olvidó que te olvidé. Se me olvidó que te dejé. Lejos, muy lejos de mi vida. Se me olvidó que ya no está. Que ya ni me recordará. Y me volví a sangrar la herida. Se me olvidó que te olvidé. Como nunca te encontré. Entre la sombra escondida. Y la verdad no sé por qué. Se me olvidó que te olvidé. A mí que nada se me olvida. Se me olvidó que te dejé, lejos, muy lejos de mi vida. Se me olvidó que ya no está, que ya ni me recordará. Y me volví a sangrar la herida. Se me olvidó que te olvidé, y como nunca te encontré. Entre la sombra escondida. Y la verdad no sé por qué se me olvidó que te olvidé. A mí que nada se me olvida.
This version is so perfect.
I like to combine that song with his Inolvidable. You know, first listen to Inolvidable, then listen to this one, you know, Unforgettable, and I Forgot That I Forgot You, which I think is so funny, the two together. It's written by a woman songwriter. I would have liked to meet her one day in the spirit world and thank her for writing the song, because so many of the songs are like, oh, you killed me, I missed you, my life is over. But I like this one. It's about resurrection, you know. Oh, yeah, I ran into you, and I forgot that I forgot you. That's wonderful. It's so nice to hear a song like that about a woman overcoming grief. And so many of my poems are about sadness and loss. And I like this one. This is just a victory song for me.
Mm-hmm. Next up, you brought a song from a soundtrack of a Spanish director who really focuses a lot on women. And women overcoming loss and women as heroes. This is from Pedro Almodóvar, from the movie High Heels, right?
Yes.
And this is the song Piensa en mí.
Tienes un hondo ganas de llorar, piensa en mí. Ya ves que venero tu imagen divina, tu párvula boca que siento tan niña me enseñó a pecar.
Can I just tell you, if we ever get Pedro Almodóvar to do a guest DJ with us, I will retire. I'm done.
Even just a conversation with him sometimes, man, that would be... He holds so many secrets, you know? It's just...
Yes.
Why this song?
Well, you know, when I was writing Caramelo, I had a whole soundtrack that I would listen to. I usually don't listen to any music at home. No se me ocurre, you know, I never think about playing music when I'm writing. I'm so focused on the music that syllables are making and that concentrating on sound. But when I was writing Caramelo, it's just the opposite. I had to listen to music from the last 100 years to get myself into a sensibilidad of an era or a place in order to get into the heads of my characters. And I listened to a lot of Agustín Lara, which is a great composer who influenced so many people, and including this writer. And I especially listened to him because he brought back to me that Mexico of the 30s and 40s and 50s, my father's time. And I so love the song. I must have listened to like 15 different versions. You know, the happy one that Doña La Negra sings, the kind of quivering one that the composer himself sings. So many that I found. I made a little cassette tapes for my friends that would be like, you know, 15 different versions of Piensa on Me and this one. So this is one of many. But I like the sadness in this one and the longing. Someone who knows me very well said, you only like to watch sad movies or listen to sad songs. Well, is it true that I only like sad, weepy song? Well, maybe it is. Well, I guess I do. I like the sad, weepy version, like the Until Death type songs. And even though I listened to all of the versions that one could sing of this song, I do like the Unto Death tone of this one.
Piensa en mí cuando sufras, cuando llores. Piensa en mí cuando quieras quitarme la vida para nada me sirve sin ti.
And this is the beautiful agony. I mean, this is the ultimate cortavenas. The weight of your guilt will make you stronger. I mean, the lyrics.
I think that's kind of a Mexican thing, no? That we like to cry, as Alma Guillermo Prieto, the journalist, has said. You know, I think we're always holding in tears. We're trying to be the stoic Mexicans. But, you know, at the end of the party, as she has said, yeah, Mexicans always end up crying.
It's not a real Mexican party until someone starts crying.
Exactly. Exactly.
I would extend
that's
that
way
to the entire continent, though. You guys don't get...
Well, maybe it's all the way down to the Patagonia, because I think it has to do with the conquest, I really do, and kind of a grief that's there and a sadness, porque estamos bien amolados, you know, and we don't want to admit it until we had a little tequila, a little bit of Chavela Vargas, a little bit of Agustín Lara to give us permission to cry.
You know, one of the things I love about Pedro Almodóvar is that his work, even though, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a sad element, but they're really odes to women. I mean, he loves women. And when I finish seeing a movie by him, I feel very, I just feel so good about being a woman. It's hard to explain. And about being a Hispanic woman. And your work, Sandra, is very similar. And I feel like recently I've read about sexism in the literary world and how much easier it is to be a male author. And I'm wondering, is that still the case? How do you feel about that? And in the lens of being a Hispanic woman, how do you feel about that?
I don't know if I should be saying these things. I'm trying to be Buddhist.
Nobody listens to this show.
Well, I think I better not say.
Okay. We will take that. We'll read into that.
let's interpret
read,
that.
Read as you may.
Let's interpret that with another song. Another type of Cortavena song that you chose. I'm going to play it and then we'll talk about it. I came to Joni Mitchell first before I really understood and appreciated singers like Chavela Vargas, but I definitely see a tie. You know, once I learned more about Chavela Vargas and really understood, you know, what her music was about, and then I saw the connection, because Joni Mitchell, she's been wearing her emotions above the surface for a long time and so artfully expressing them.
I think there's a lot of us who were young people listening to very astutely to the poetry of her lyrics. I was just listening to a CD of Luis Alfaro's Heroes and Saints, where he talks about Joni Mitchell and, you know, her importance and her poetry. And, you know, for me too, you know, as a young poet, listening to her lyrics and how beautiful things that she did with her writing, it wasn't just, you know, yeah, 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 but she was really exploring herself and opening her soul. And this song in particular was an anthem of my 20s. I think the 20s for women are the most difficult decade because you're at your most beautiful, and everybody is looking at your exterior, not your interior self. You are being told by church and state and everybody else who can get their opinion in there what you should be, how you should behave, what is a good woman. And you have never been asked, nor do you even know what you want yourself. It's hard to differentiate what you want, especially if it's so opposed to what your culture or your father, your church want from you. So to me, this was a great song of giving me permission to ask myself, what do I want? And I think if you're a beautiful woman, you're doubly cursed. People don't take you seriously, or people take advantage, or people break your heart. And I felt especially vulnerable during that decade. So when I meet young women, oh, my heart goes out to them. And I always say, well, don't worry. It only lasts 10 years. You can get past that decade and get to 30 and say, okay, what is it that I want? And keep going on that path. It takes a lot of courage to counter the people you love.
Chose Maria Callas.
I'm just here with tears in my eyes listening to that. Oh my God, what a beautiful piece. Anything Maria sings teaches me how to write. I just listen to her and I say, this is how I want to write. And especially that song right now, you know, is, my mom died 5 years ago, but, you know, anyone whose mom died, it's like it just happened. So when you listen to that song, wow, you know, you don't understand opera until you've lost someone to death and listen to that song. You go, yeah, that's it. So I love Maria Callas. I thank my mom to introduce me to opera. And I just think Maria Callas was incomparable. She really lived, you know, with con ganas. And pobrecita, I really would have liked her to live longer and had a more victorious end. But and just listening to her when I'm lost or trying to find my way in my writing or I'm stuck or don't know what to do next, I just listen to any song that Maria sings. She's so true and honest. And I'll say, that's what I'm trying to do. That's the place I'm trying to reach.
Sent us an email before we taped the show, and you picked Nino Rota's score from Fellini's 8 and a half.
Yes.
And you said that you said something interesting. You said, I want this to be played at my funeral.
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Well, let's hear the song and then I'll tell you.
Oh, okay.
It's such a funny, it's kind of like a march. It sounds like those little Mexican bands that they
that play
at the, yeah, like the bands that play at weddings and at funerals, and which is the same band in the little towns where everybody just follows and goes, you know, it's kind of surreal, hilarious, and funny and tragic, which is like life. I don't want a traditional funeral. I just want a memorial. I just want to be cremated and my ashes put underneath a native tree, because I want to become a tree, with a little memorial bench that says, Ni modo. And I want people to tell stories and laugh and have a very simple lunch and just stay until they cry and laugh and march around to this song.
Sandra Cisneros, thank you so much for taking time to play music with us.
You have taken me to all these emotions. I'm soggy-eyed here and happy, sad, all. This is your life. Thank you for this beautiful gift.
Oh, thank you for joining us and supplying the music.
Alt Latino, making famous authors cry. Ay, gracias por venir. Me encantó hablarte. Thank you so much.
Y gracias por la oportunidad, because now this has become my favorite dinner question. Pick a dozen songs that tell me about you.
We have a few more songs on the list that we couldn't get to, and you can hear all of these songs in their entirety on our website at npr.org/altlatino.
Sandra Cisneros joined us from Texas Public Radio. I want to remind our listeners that you can continue the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. We're NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Jasmine Garz.
And I'm Felix Contreras, and we've been talking to Sandra Cisneros. This has been Alt Latino.